From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
In late winter, we gardeners rev up around sowing those first seeds indoors under lights. But the promise of a bountiful vegetable garden that keeps on giving doesn't end there. Now's also the moment to make succession sowing plans for the longer haul. And a range of the smartest tactics to accomplish that is our topic today with Meg Cowden, author of a new book called Plant, Grow, Harvest, Repeat. But first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, the leading publisher in books that share wonders with the natural world, including A Way to Garden by Margaret Roach. The stunning guide imparts decades of plant wisdom and challenges readers to think beyond their garden borders and to consider the ways gardening can enrich the world. Available everywhere books are sold and at timberpress.com. They invite you to come grow with them.
Meg Cowden gardens in the upper Midwest in Zone 4B, Minnesota, but that doesn't deter her from eking out an extended harvest of a diversity of edibles that anyone anywhere would envy. How she accomplished that is the subject of her new book, Plant, Grow, Harvest, Repeat, and she's here today to share some of her strategies. Hi, Meg.
Hi, Margaret. It's such an honor to be on your show today. Thank you so much.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say. And I'm just like, when I think about Zone 4B, I'm 5 feet. And I think about Zone 4B and I'm like, whoa, look at what she does there. She's amazing.
That is the goal, Margaret. Pretty much we're done. That's it. People should really take inspiration. If I can do it, I've been saying this for years. If I can grow more, everyone can grow more.
Yeah. And I love the title of the book, Plant, Grow, Harvest, Repeat. It's like, yeah, exactly. And so before we get started, I want to say we'll have a giveaway of the book with the transcript of this show on awaytogarden.com. So people can go there and comment and enter to win a chance to win a copy of the book. And I've been enjoying it and sort of studying your tactics. I love that you start the book by speaking to nature's great inspirations on the subject of succession sowing, the forest and the tall grass prairie. Now, tell us briefly how those inspired you.
Yeah, those are really my lens through which I've always appreciated the natural world. And the more I food gardened over the last 20 some years, the more I started using those landscapes as kind of a mirror of what I could be doing and how I could be rethinking my garden. You know, like I think the prairie to me is really the most instructive one. And it's the one I lean on the hardest in the book because prairies provide different flower types and they are providing them every week and month of the growing season. And it's like, yes, we should be doing this with our gardens too.
Right.
Diversity, right?
Right. Like a community. It's like a successional community.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it changes and it shifts in reflection to what the climate's like every year. And wetter years, different flowers come forth and they move and they negotiate and our palettes change, right? It's dynamic. And we're walking along with our planted prairies here, just like I'm walking along with my annual vegetable gardens, and no two seasons or even a season within a season are alike. And so that's really where I drew the inspiration from. And I think it really helps. I hope it helps all of the readers of the book and even your listeners to examine how we see our plants around us and how they are in community and negotiating space and how that can inform how we consider our plantings, our plant spacing, placement of plantings, and so on. I mean, the lessons are infinite, as you know, as a lifelong gardener.
And I know about both things, the succession in the forest, the succession in the tall grass prairie, and vegetable successions, and I never put them all together. So I love that. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Yes. Yeah.
So I think of succession sowing or succession planning in the garden as like the 3D chess of it all. You know, there's a lot of moving parts and various dimensions. And you write in the book that we have to adopt the view that the garden is never fully planted. And you give us ways to work toward that, the sort of most familiar anchor of which maybe is continuous planting, which you call the heart of the succession garden. So what's continuous planting?
That is being a very close friends with your seeds. I mean, you have to really, I consider this the ultimate mindfulness tool of a food gardener. It's a marathon. It's a journey. It's not a sprint. It's us walking alongside our garden and really seeing opportunities and seizing them in any number of ways. And so for me, that might be using my years of experience to know that in June, I need to be sowing my fall cabbages indoors to transplant them after the 4th of July. But it also is really looking at the physical space, and maybe something's not working. So maybe you want to think about what you could put there. So it's a combination of kind of all sowing types, right? It's not just direct seeding, but it's also raising plants and using transplants as well.
Right. And so among your tactics, and you have a lot of sort of tactical approaches that you delve into in the book, and you talk about one that's, I think you call it single crops with staggered maturity, like even how tomatoes, if you plant three different kinds of tomatoes, and I think you mentioned like you have a cherry tomato and a beefsteak tomato at the other end and something in the middle. And even just by having those three tomatoes, you've got a staggered harvest or a succession of tomatoes. So that's one tactic, right?
Yeah. And I think that is hopefully blows the door wide open for listeners, because I think succession planting can feel really ominous to people and it sounds confusing, but I bet almost all of your listeners are tomato gardeners. And so when we appreciate that we have seasons within a season of summer where different tomatoes are cropping, that is a succession planting, and we all need to celebrate and learn from that. And so what does that look like? For me, broccoli. You can scour your seed catalogs and find so many other things that can crop. Look at days to maturity, look at cold tolerance and heat tolerance. And so within that, you can choose a few different types and you will get a steady stream of food for longer out of any one food type.
Right. I mean, like, I think radishes are sort of the most hilarious and extreme example in a way, because there are radishes that are what, like a couple, few weeks, and there are some that go a much longer, you know, like the big daikons and stuff. So, I mean, radishes, for instance, is
right.
One.
Right. Weeks to months apart, right? Like 28 days to like 60 days or something.
So a radish is not a radish is not a radish when we're seed shopping, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we'll even think about squash, right? You say the word squash, you've got summer squash that crops in 50 days, but you've got, you know, a Hubbard that crops in 100 days or something, you know, I mean, same thing, right?
Right. Like, and even among the summer or the winter, there are probably variations. I mean, there are some that are bush types and some, you know what I mean? I mean, it's like read the fine print is really super important advice, I think, you know?
Yeah. And this, to me, it's a really beautiful way of if you are someone who wants to plant your garden once, you should be incorporating a staggered maturity into that, because that
right.
will give you the succession garden when planted just once, if that makes sense.
Right. I did, you know, so again, I didn't really think of that, but it's so, of course, obvious. You're right. So if you don't want to be there at the ready throughout the season with another set of transplants that you've sown indoors or extra seeds to tuck in or whatever, if you don't want to do that, you had better well have planned the days to maturity of the different varieties that you've got out there. Oh, very good point. Very good point.
Thanks.
So blocking is another one. And this one that you recommend is a sort of a tactic. Blocking, it kind of reminds me of farmers, you know, who have, I've seen a lot of crop plans and neighbors who are farmers where I live and stuff and people I've interviewed. And, you know, they show me their crop plan and it shows like, you know, portions of a field, blocks, so to speak, that are going to be this. And then when that's pulled, they're going to do this. And then they're going to put a cover crop on it. Three successions. You know, it's like blocks. And I think that's what you mean, but on a different scale.
It's absolutely what I mean. I call our home gardens are almost like mini forests, right? They're like, they're smaller versions of the larger landscape, essentially. And the scale is just different, both the time and the spatial scale. So yes, I exactly mean my block of onions is akin to someone else's acre of onions, right?
Right.
It's just at a different scale. And the thing I love about it is I do have a penchant for tidiness in my garden.
I have noticed that, Missy, with some of your pictures, some gorgeous photos. And we should say you're at Seed to Fork, I believe, on Instagram. And, you know, your pictures and your stories, reels, whatever, you know, it's very... The garden from the bird's eye view, especially that you sometimes show us, is just very orderly and, you know, and I'm like, oh, wow, she really has it together.
It's a facade, Margaret.
Okay. She does it with mirrors. Okay, good.
Yeah, there's lots of them all over the place. So some foods, I talk about this in the book, the whole idea with blocking is there are some foods that can commingle, but some foods you don't want to commingle. And so for blocking, for me, the thing I love about it is when you can reset a space in this predictable interval, it allows you to kind of think ahead a little more. So yes, onions and garlic are my biggest blockings that I use in succession planting. In addition to, as you just mentioned about farmers, cover cropping. I use that as a blocking approach to basically make sure I don't plant the whole garden in spring and that I save an area for my longest fall garden crops.
Right.
And so then you can turn that over, but I take that initial block that was a block and an even aged, as I call it, kind of like a forest that people are going to clear cut or a field of corn. It's my onion planting. I take it and then I turn it into more of a staggered maturity garden for the fall. And I mix in things like head lettuce and kohlrabi and bok choy and Chinese cabbage. And then it becomes more of a cornucopia and a slower drip of food. So it's a wonderful way of turning over space. I find it much easier to have a 4x4 area or a 4x8 area that opens up and I can fully reset instead of trying to negotiate. I'm not one to like take like 1 square foot and like replant it.
You're not Mel Bartholomew then. You're not doing foot garden. But I mean, it is the same thinking though, is a strategic thinking of the use of space as modules, as a number of modules.
Correct. You know? Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, visualizing it that way, which is, and so to do that part, to do the blocking and some of these other things as well, record keeping must be very important. Like you must be very organized that way, you know, because you kind of, to think about, and then this is going to, like those farmers I mentioned, you know, when they're like, I'm going to have my, you know, salads here, and then I'm going to have such and such, and then I'm going to have a cover crop, whatever. They have charts and they have lists and they're organized that way. Do you keep a lot of records?
I do. And I've gotten better over the years. I mean, we've been growing, this is my 6th season growing at this scale, which is about 1/4 acre of a food garden. And before that we were in, you know, very small urban gardens. I mean, our garden is larger than our former city lots, you know, Home Boulevard. Yes. Yeah. I mean, like we did leave the city. The size necessitated organization in a way. I could get away with it in the city by not really having a plan. But once we moved here, I keep Google spreadsheets and I save them year over year. I just kind of copy the document every year and resave it. And then I start anew and I try to put lists down. I have a tab for my sewing trays. And then I have another tab for the date and how many row feet I direct sew things. The next level of organization would be me actually writing notes about quantities and if that square footage was enough. And like, for example, carrots, you know, I do not like buying carrots in May at the store, but it does come to that at some point in the spring for us. So trying to increase how many square feet do I need to increase my carrot garden so that I don't have to buy carrots in May and then I could have some from last year. Anyway, I say this to be humble, Margaret, because you know, as a gardener, our work is never done. And that is the joy of the journey, knowing that we could continually improve. And so my record keeping is pretty good. It falls off the rails by about August 20th, when I am trying to like can my tomatoes and transplant my fall stuff and direct seed my watermelon radish and get the kids ready for school and, you know. So
yes,
at that point, I like lose track. Like just recently, I was like, I wonder how many row feet I sowed of my we have so many daikon and watermelon radish because the garden was larger last year. And I was able to plant a whole bunch of rows. And in October, I thought I was crazy. But in March right now, we are still enjoying daikon.
Oh, it's totally nice to have the root crops. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I didn't write down how many row feet I had. So can I backtrack by my aerial photos? Maybe. I don't know. I haven't figured. So anyway.
But my record keeping,
I highly encourage at any size. And the notes during the season is important. You know, I'll go back to my spreadsheets and be like, oh, I said start this 2 weeks later. Oh, good job, Meg 2020.
Okay. So when something hasn't been quite right and you have an insight on the spot, you try to footnote it. Yeah. Good.
I do. I go back into those spreadsheets. Yeah. Good. And I'm not paper. I have my phone, unfortunately, lives in the palm of my hand. And so that's where I write things down these days. Yeah.
So another tactic then, besides, the single crop with staggered maturity and the blocking, is continuous seed starting. And I wondered, do you do this indoors? Like, so we are all starting seedlings in, depending on where we live, you know, it could be more southerly, it could be February, it could be March or in April, in more northerly. Anyway, we're doing that early on. But I think the smartest gardeners I know keep doing that to have transplants available, because guess what? The garden center doesn't sell transplants except in peak spring. So do you keep doing that, and do you do that indoors, or what do you do?
Yes, I am. My lights are on. They've been on for a month and they will be on until July sometime.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I think I sow my last flats probably mid-July for August. So like my kohlrabi and my last bok choy and things like that. I am trying to explore direct seeding more, but the challenge with that is, of course, the garden pests in the height of summer.
Yes.
And, keeping up with the watering of seedlings. I mean, like, I think I say this in my book that like, there is a pretty good chance that I do not have a cabbage moth outbreak inside my home in July. And so it's a safer place for them to start their life.
Right. Right. So for instance, something like kale, for instance, do you keep doing sowings indoors and keep putting them out, or some examples of some things that you do that with?
Yeah. Broccoli is a really big mm-hmm. one, and cabbage. We mm-hmm. are a cruciferous family. We eat mm-hmm. a lot of brassicas and they grow really well. And I think we have a lot of downfalls to our cold climate, but growing brassicas from April to December is a huge benefit. And we're lucky that we really enjoy eating them.
Okay.
So that is one that I sow almost monthly. I've got a tray I sowed right now, end of March, maybe sometime in May, but by the beginning of June, I sow another tray. And then I always try to eke out one last tray in July because I'm stubborn and I'm like, okay, how late can I sow broccoli? Let me remind myself.
Right.
So every year, in addition to like my known, I'm always like, oh, if I have an extra spot in this tray, let me see how bad would, you know, like yeah. I had broccoli that I was not able to get out to the garden until July last year, August. And I didn't think it would do anything. And I did get heads by November. I mean, they were not my traditional super large 6 to 8 inch wide heads.
Right.
They were like mini heads, but I was very proud of that, that helped. And that is the redefinition. That is being a succession planter. And that is living with a succession garden, is continuing to question what your seasons are and how to define that. But yes, you're right. When you spoke of garden centers, I pretty much need to say, hi, my name is Meg. I am my own garden center. I mean,
right. And really to do what you're talking about in this book, Plant, Grow, Harvest, Repeat, you really do. You need to stock up on seeds and you need to be your own garden center throughout the season. Because otherwise, you can't just run out to shop for this stuff at the other times that it's needed. So then one that I loved, this totally cracked me up, is there's a photo of you in the book crouching between rows of like almost mature cabbages or broccoli or something, I think. And it's almost like there's a no space, like no one else would see the space, but you see the space. And you're like crouching and you're sowing bush bean seeds. You're poking them in almost where those leaves of the adjacent rows of the crucifers touch, but you're like kind of almost moving the leaves apart and like putting those little bean seeds in there, because you know you're going to harvest those adjacent cabbages or whatever before long, and those beans are going to be up, right? Is that so? This is called interplanting, and this is a great tactic for really maximizing space. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that space actually had radishes in it before I had put the beans in too. So I interplant all of my brassicas with rows of radishes. Now, I do this, but I also have a massive garden, so I really don't need to interplant like this. I do it for beauty, for aesthetics. It helps me. I'm saving space, sure, but I need to acknowledge that like space isn't really at a premium in our garden.
But for most people, that is, it's an important tactic. It gives you, even if you could wait till you pull the adjacent crops, it's giving you a head start on that next bean harvest by getting a little earlier. So even if it's not purely space, it's timing, you know?
Right. It's weeks. Yeah. And I do that. And I would say, as you noted, the sort of overstory of broccoli and cabbage was not a fully closed canopy. And I'm referring kind of to the first chapter of my book here a little bit, but they were kind of more open grown. So there was enough light there to get those to germinate.
Yes.
And that is a really important thing when you go to interplant, is to make sure that you are pairing the right things together and you're not overcrowding things, because there's nothing worse than an overambitious gardener with some mismatched crops. Because it's a recipe for disappointment, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times, like I notice in gardens, including my own, along the edges, like we might have tomatoes in the middle of, like, say we have a raised bed, you know, and it's, you know, 4 or 5 feet wide and X number of feet long. And we maybe have tomatoes down the middle. And then there's all this space at the edges. Do you know what I mean? And I know one side is going to be shadier, but hey, maybe that's a good place for something that could use a little cooling off in the heat of summer when the tomatoes are big. And, you know, so even those spaces, to, you know, consider those part of our real estate, so to speak.
Absolutely.
You have this really fun, so besides those sort of tactics, there's also, you kind of categorize as different types of successions, like quick ones and, I don't know, sort of mid-length or mid-season ones and late ones. And I love what you call garden fast food, the really quick successions. And what I wanted to do when I read that was I wanted to, like, go back to the seed catalogs and make sure I had packets of all these kinds of seeds that make for great garden fast food, these quick successions, speaking of being your own garden center. I wanted to go and, like, make sure I had enough of this stuff. So tell us about some of those things that you can pretty much tuck in for a quick hit to maximize space, even if you didn't plan perfectly well months in advance, right?
Yes. And for me, this is really big, because these are seeds that we can plop in the ground when the ground is thawed, like well before last frost. These are frost hardy. These are cold shoulder season, cold week friends of the garden, and they're fast. Like, to me, they are the best of everything, especially for a northern gardener. So radishes that we've talked about already,
right?
And so many wonderful greens, Asian greens, bok choy, mustard greens, spinach, arugula, leaf lettuce, things that when you think about these foods, with the exception of the radish, they are producing their leafy matter. And that's what we're consuming. So we are not waiting for the fruiting stage of life,
right,
which is what the later successions are. We're eating them. So right. So that's the beauty of them. And I think this is where I didn't used to eat a lot of mustard greens, but the more I succession garden and succession plant, the more my palate is becoming more attuned to seasonally eating and really embracing and looking for and reaching for things that are meant to be consumed at that time.
Right. So in the last, we have maybe, you know, 3 minutes or something, and in the last, you've mentioned it a couple of times, kohlrabi, which I think almost nobody grows, but you call it the fastest brassica, and you have some tips about it. So tell us how you got to be a kohlrabi fan, and give us, extol the virtues of kohlrabi so that maybe some of us order some seed.
Oh, kohlrabi, it really is the greatest. I would probably say being CSA members back when we lived in the city is where we first learned of it. So again, this is where I swear the sagest succession planters are our farmers.
Yes.
Because they must succession plant to provide food every week for their customers, because that's their livelihood. So they are like the master, right? We could all learn more from them.
Yes.
And so that's where I learned about kohlrabi. And then we grew it. We've been growing it for over 10 years now, and the kids loved growing it when they were little. And I played with, you know, open pollinated varieties and hybrid varieties here some 5-6 years ago, and realized the open pollinated varieties put on a lot of leaves, and those leaves were sticking out everywhere from the bulb. And the bulb was like half the size, of the softball. And I thought, this is the virtue of plant breeding. And, you know, I am a fan of open pollinated, but there's a place for hybrid vigor.
Yes,
and I really think brassicas is a huge place for me, where I lean more heavily towards hybrids. They grow faster. They're more uniform. Of course, the uniformity is for the farmers, and that's why hybrids, I think, do exist. And I digress.
Yeah.
But you can eat the leaves. If you don't have any other greens in your garden and you just grow kohlrabi in spring, you have a mock kale salad with the leaves and you have a vegetable that you can eat raw, right, that you can shred, that you can, right, roast, that you can cook. I mean, it's delicious. It's crunchy. What else can you get that's crunchy like that? And yeah, has the brassica flavor so quickly.
Yeah, no, it made me smile to see you praise it, because it's not one that we hear a lot about. Well, I'm so glad to speak to you. And the book is Plant, Grow, Harvest, Repeat by Meg Cowden. And I will have the book giveaway, as I said, with the transcript. And I hope we'll speak again soon. Thanks so much for making time today, Meg.
That would be lovely. Thanks so much, Margaret.
Okay.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, the leading publisher in books that share wonders with the natural world, including A Way to Garden by Margaret Roach. The stunning guide imparts decades of plant wisdom and challenges readers to think beyond their garden borders and to consider the ways gardening can enrich the world. Available everywhere books are sold and at timberpress.com. They invite you to come grow with them.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com. And happy gardening meantime.